welcome to Quest Youth Radio, Quest Community Vibrations, a special edition. Music, like poetry, has a message, and history is like a diamond that shines clear to the truth. Words have meanings that we can comprehend like definitions. News can create a chain of events that we may not always understand. Now pull back the curtain and see the contributions of our diaspora, and you will find our Quest moment, where we attempt to make waves, in fact, vibrations. Thank you again for joining us here for a different perspective of our community. I would like to begin tonight's show by talking about chains of events, which is normally always our first segment. Chains of events is an interpretation of news as it affects the community. From the Alloys of the United States of America, a report on events in politics, education, law, business, religion, and science, chains of events reveals the interpretation of one event to another so that you, the listener, will know what's happening. It was in 1812 when a siege on the White House occurred. And as a result, it was burned. Today, January 6, 2021, the United States of America's White House was under siege. People actually broke in to the White House while Congress and Senate was in session. And that is my chain of event, with no comments, completely objectivity, to turn it over to our student host, who I will allow to introduce himself. Good evening.
Yes, good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations. Everybody knows that Quest Youth Radio is the best youth radio. And for today's show, later on in the show, we're going to get into the events that occurred today. But for right now, I want to start off with a diamond. And see, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people at a particular period of time. Look into the diamond and see the reflections of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply, and you are bound to find yourself. Now, for today's diamond, my theme for today with the diamonds is sports. And I want to start off with an athlete from the old generation, we could say, that, you know, probably doesn't, is not well known because of the sport he plays. And since the sport is so predominantly Eastern European and white dominated, another term you could use, European dominated, you know, I want to talk about him because, you know, he is a two-time, he's the only African-American to win a U.S. Open and a Wimbledon singles title, and that is for tennis. And he's also one of the first African-American men to earn the number one ranking in the world and also be inducted into the Tennis Hall of Fame. And without further ado, his name is Arthur Ashe. And see, you know, Arthur Ashe, you know, growing up, he first was introduced to the sport at the age of 7. And, you know, ever since then, he's just been a prodigy. He's just been attached to the sport in the way. And then just growing up, you know, he's won a lot of junior titles, and he's gained a lot of recognition, which allowed him to be able to, you know, compete professionally. And, you know, his mother, you know, died at when he was at a young age. So, you know, everything that he's done, you know, inspired by his mom's passing, you know, wanted to play in her honor. So, you know, as we continue, you know, though, let's talk about, you know, the Wimbledon and the U.S. Open. You know, one of the biggest tennis events, you could say, currently one of the big, it's like a major, you know, it's a major event. A lot of people actually tune in to watch these events. So, if you think of something like the NBA Finals for some people, or the Super Bowl. That's what, like, these events for tennis are. They're that big. So, you know, being able to actually win the U.S. Open, you know, in 1968, and also winning the Wimbledon title in 1975, you know, those were very big accomplishments, especially for a man who was African-American. And an African-American man, even until this day, has still never done what he has done by winning both of those events. And, you know, even he gained a number one in the world, you know, as a sport that is predominantly European, and him being the only African-American really competing at that level to be number one was something that is shows how good he actually was in his field. But, you know, this happened a pretty good while ago, you know, and I believe that people really didn't really recognize and don't really know too much about him, you know. Probably the people who, of course, are into the sport are really with it. But, you know, when we think of the best athletes, best all time, you know, we think of, you know, the people like Michael Jordan or the people of the football as well as that, you know, the sports that are predominantly shown, or the sports that give the most television time, and a lot of the people actually see and watch, you know. But, you know, we also should include these other type of sports, you know, also with golf and also with, you know, other sports. You know, you can even include stuff like NASCAR. You can include things like, you know, even sometimes baseball, I believe, can be a little bit underrated. But, you know, it's always good to just see the best at these sports, actually somebody that actually looks like yourself and shares the same skin tone as what you have. It's always great seeing somebody as a sport that is, you know, of course, didn't really have people that really look like us actually participate is always something that is great to see. And, you know, not only was he just dominant on the court, you know, he was somebody who gave back to his communities. He started inner city tennis programs for his youth, you know, for youth. And even he even started programs even out in South Africa as well, you know, even encouraging them, helping them, and mentoring them so that they could get a visa so that they could even play in the U.S. So, you know, just somebody, you know, of that stature, it's always another thing, always good to see somebody giving back to their community and helping out, because that's exactly what he has done, you know, even going back to Africa, helping out those people who want to play the sport as well, getting visas so they could come to the U.S., you know, shows he was just committed just on the tennis court as well as committed to his community and helping out his people. But, you know, sadly, you know, he was diagnosed with actually AIDS. You know, AIDS is, especially during that time, it was a new type of disease. You know, a lot of people were contracting it, but not people were really understanding the severity or what the disease actually is. So, you know, there wasn't really a cure for it, of course, during that time period. So he actually ended up passing away, sadly, in 1992, I believe. And, you know, yeah, that just really concludes my piece on Arthur Ashe. I want to shout out biography.com for the article. And, you know, again, Arthur Ashe, I believe, somebody who we should talk about more when we talk about, you know, the great sport athletes. You know, we talk about the sports that are mainly shown, again, but we need to talk about these other sports that, you know, a lot of people probably don't recognize and recognize their talents in these sports. It's just as, you know, just they work just as hard as, you know, people either play basketball or football. Some of these people out here, they work just as hard. So, you know, I believe we should also include Arthur Ashe in those conversations, you know, especially him doing something that not another African-American man has done. And that's actually winning those two majors I listed. So, again, thank you for listening. And this was co-host Walter Pierce.
Okay. Well, student host, I don't see you as a co, right? You have just as much juice as I do. But I want to say you reminded me of a time, and some of us elders that are on the line will remember when a black program came on television, we all flock to the TV just to see the program. Or if a black performer was going to be performing, we would all flock to the TV just to see them. And Arthur Ashe was one of those people that we all flocked to follow and see. he also, as he went, he actually put one of these tennis courts in Westside Park in the city of Newark. When he passed away, he just didn't contract AIDS. He contracted AIDS during a blood transfusion, okay? And that's how he contracted it. During he got a dose of somebody else's blood that happened to be tainted, and that's what actually gave him AIDS. Just to give you some more background, Walt, we're going to continue musically with the sounds of Curtis Mayfield.
Curtis Mayfield had his finger on the pulse of society. Even when we as a people did not know where we were going, Curtis musically led the way. One of my favorite parts in one of his songs said,
"People must prove to the people a better day is coming for you and for me."
Yes, and welcome back, everybody, to the show. That was some good music. again by Curtis Mayfield. But now I want to introduce another one of our people on the team as well. Chris, are you there?
Evening, fellas. How's everything going? I'm here.
Going good.
All right, so we're going to get into I have a diamond for you guys also. So who I'm going to be talking about, first of all, history is like a diamond. Each prism represents the work of a group of people in a particular time period. Look into the diamond and see your reflection of your past self, the pain of your mother, the choice of your father, and the blood of your ancestors. Look deeply, and you are bound to find yourself. So I have a diamond about a person who had invented something very important to the shape of our society today. This person had been the first person to invent home security, and her name is Marie Van Britten Brown. So Marie Van Britten Brown had invented the first home security. She was born in 1922. And sadly passed away in 1999. But what inspired her to make the first home security was her feelings towards the reaction of the police when called upon during a crime. And she grew up in New York City. So in New York City at that time in the 20s, well, she was born in the 20s, so I would say in the 40s. At the time, in the 40s in New York City, there was a lot of car robbery, theft, murder, stabbings. So she had to develop something that was gonna, you know, protect her and her family from all of the things that was out there in the world. So she was inspired by that, the time that it took for the police to get to the neighborhood. So Marie Van Brown invented the first home security, and her work hours were not the standard 9-to-5. Like I mentioned, the crime rate in New York City at the time was very high. So she had a curiosity to who would be on the other side of the door. It was always something she would wonder. So she started her invention by creating 3 peepholes in the door and provided access for tall people, average height people, you know, so to include her children. So our next step was to install a camera, and that camera would adjust to the peepholes in order to allow people inside the house to look outside to see who was there. She wanted to find a way to view who was outside the house from any room. So she had developed a way to use wireless television systems, and she decided that worked best. So in order for her to do that, she used a radio-controlled wireless system, which would stream the video to any television in the house. So along with the system, Marie and her husband, she was also married, so her and her husband created a two-way microphone system, which would allow for communication between the family and the person at the door. So to do this, she invented a system that invented a way to contact the police, because it wasn't only enough for her to want to know who's at the other end of the door. Because had it been someone, you know, with ill intentions, you would want to be able to, you know, still protect yourself and call the law enforcement too. So that also aided into her wanting to, you know, shorten the time frame for police response. So what she did was she invented a way to contact the police with emergency responders with just the tap of a button. And that invention alone changed the world of home security, and that led to a number of current home security systems. So Marie Van Brown, she had invented the first home security system, and it might seem like mediocre the way that it started off with just 3 peepholes, but that's technology in itself. you know, using your intuition and your tinkering skills along with the circumstance to create a better situation, you know, to be more knowledgeable about what's happening. She utilized her circumstance to make something, you know, world-defining. You know, she shaped the whole way security systems operate today. And, of course, they're, you know, a lot more high-tech these days. But I find her real fascinating for that. You got any feedback about that, Mr. Bay or Walter? Any of that intrigued you?
Yeah, you know, going into like what you were talking about, I actually heard about this, you know, this story of the of how, you know, the security was created. You know, it was always intriguing to me because, you know, I never knew like who actually created it, or I never thought of who created this. But when you just go back and it was created by a person of color, you know, it's always just a win for us, you know, something that we could say that we invented, that we've started and created. You know, I believe that should definitely be something that she should be given a lot of recognition and attention for, a lot, because security, all of that is like, it's everywhere today. It's all over the country. It's all over the world. Everything that, like, every time you walk down the street, you don't know, you're probably being recorded by a CCTV or a security cameras or something like that. So, you know, just hearing something like that, you know, somebody, especially the person you've talked about today, should definitely get a lot of credit for it, for sure. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that, too.
Absolutely. Close circuit television is being used in security systems throughout the world, throughout many buildings, and it's definitely on point and on time. As we continue musically, joyous.
Throw away your troubles, leave your blues behind. 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 Free your frustrations and hijacking your time. Throw away your troubles, leave your blues behind. Everybody together in a universal mind. Troubles, leave your blues behind. Throw away your troubles, leave your blues behind.
Yes, and welcome back, everybody, to Quest Youth Radio, the best youth radio. And I want to continue on with my second diamond. As I said, today's theme is sports. Now, for this diamond, you know, this man right here is in the basketball world. You know, a lot of people who watch basketball, actually everybody who watch basketball, should know who this man is. And, you know, he tragically passed away. Last January, and you know, he was just a man that just had a mentality that was different from everybody's, which a lot of people follow. And his name is Kobe Bryant. And now, you know, everybody, you know, we all know about the, you know, 1996 drafted straight out of, you know, straight out of high school, just a young kid trying to find his way in the NBA. Who ended up getting five rings, five NBA championships, which is an incredible honor, incredible thing to accomplish. You know, him and Shaq, also Shaquille O'Neal. Shout out Shaquille O'Neal, also a Newark resident. You know, person who, I mean, a Newark native, I should say, but you know, somebody who's you know, been alongside with Kobe a lot. You know, They won three championships actually together, and you know, they've had this hate love relationship, but you know, at the end of the day, they got business done and they still loved each other. But you know, but just beside, also, you know, which really the reason is just his mentality was the reason why it just made him so great and people consider him one of the best. And you know, he calls it the Mamba mentality. And you know, He's endured two injuries, I want to say. You know, Achilles, probably one of the worst injuries you could obtain in a, for an athlete, you know, during your NBA career or any sport career or anything in life. You know, one of the worst injuries you could get, you know, how painful it was. And, you know, tearing his Achilles, you know, even right after tearing it, you know, he still went up because he had free throws to shoot. He shot two free throws. And, walked right off the court. And that's a part of his mama mentality, his toughness, which inspires a lot of people, you know, with either their sport, you know, either dealing with basketball or just in general in life. We talk a lot about obstacles. We talked a lot, had a definition, actually, you know, had a definition, which with obstacles, you know, that how, or definition actually, perseverance, and how and how people of color in this country, you know, we always had to persevere. And we've always had obstacles. And we've always had to overcome those obstacles. And that's exactly what we have done over our life in America. And we're still actually doing it today. But, you know, that relates to the mama mentality that Kobe Bryant had, because his, you know, he went through a lot of obstacles he had to go through with his sport or his life, you know, that he constantly had to keep persevering through so that he could be able to get to the top and be known by millions of people all across the world. So, you know, again, you know, we never really got to see what he could have accomplished after, too much after his career. He had his mama's sports academy, which included his daughter Gigi, who also passed away with him in the helicopter crash. But, you know, we've never really got to see what he could have done. But people are saying, you know, he had a lot of things planned for to help people in this world. So, you know, it was sad to see him go, but always he could always be remembered by his mama mentality. And you could say people of color have always had that mentality, mama mentality in America, because we always had to overcome our obstacles and continue to persevere. So, again, thank you. And this is student host Walter Pierce.
All right, Walter. You know, of course, I love the sport of basketball. And Kobe Bryant, while I wasn't a fan of his, I definitely respected him and his game and his ability to overcome adversity on the basketball court and actually off the court as well. And, you know, I want to continue on with a cut by Nina Simone.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on the tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. Fly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean. Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world and a bold world for me. Shine, you know how I feel. Spend all the pine, you know how I feel. The freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me.
Yes, and welcome back, everybody, you know, to the show. And I want to go on and I want to go to my next segment of today, which is definitions. And see, for definitions, of course, I said in the beginning of the show, I wanted to, we were talking about, you know, the events that have occurred today, especially the White House, the Capitol building, and how it has been, people have actually went inside and broke into the, you know, the Capitol building. And, again, you know, something just, again, as he said, he didn't have any of the comments. Mr. Bay had nothing to say after that. Just think about that. People breaking in to a Capitol building in an area that's supposed to be probably one of the most secure and, you know, have the most law enforcement in to protect it, probably in the country. That place is supposed to be one of the most secure, and you think about just regular people just walking and breaking in, and, you know, not really, you don't really hear that much about people. You know, I don't want to go that deep yet, but you know, just the idea that people actually stormed on to the area and broke in is something that again is something that causes people to actually think about the state of this country. And, you know, the definition I just wanted to say is just hypocrite, because the reason I want to use the definition hypocrite is because of another event. Think about the Black Lives Matter movement and think about the protests that came along with the movement. You know, so we have the protests we call today, Trump losing the election, basically, and then we have the BLM movement. That peaked very in the summer of 2020. And, you know, a lot of protests were during that time. And when I define hypocrite is basically a person who, you know, a phony, you want to say. Let's just say a phony, you know, somebody who says something, who tells you not to do something, tells you something is wrong, but they do that exact same thing, you know. You could think of somebody like that as a hypocrite. And, you know, you see people constantly attacked how and constantly support law enforcement for, you know, using force on people of color in this country and also during protests. And, of course, you know, the reason behind these movements, the peak was, you know, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, you know, Ahmaud Arbery, and the many others, even Jacob Blake a little bit later on. But, you know, you see people out here, and basically really the majority, or probably all these people are, or let's say majority of these people are Trump, support Trump. You know, we don't want to get too political, but we're just making a connection here. You know, those people, you know, support Trump's presidency and want him again for another term. And you see them constantly, you know, defending law enforcement and knocking the BLM protests, calling these riots constantly. But these same people turn around, and first there was actually video, there's multiple videos, you know, of so-called protesters of today's movement, of today's events, let's call it that, you know, using force towards law enforcement, towards police officers, and the big thing to top it off, breaking into a federal building that is supposed to be protected. And, you know, when you think about a federal building being broken in protected, you think about that as what? Terrorism, right? That is terrorism. You're terrorizing an area. But, you know, a lot of people, they use words, oh, we're just angry, you know, this is what they deserve, you know, fraud election, just throwing out all of these, you know, different things, you know, and it just proves that the state that America is actually in right now, and it just shows hypocrisy. And, you know, I'm going to let you get in this too, Mr. Bay, but, you know, you know, at the end of the day, you can't call and support law enforcement for using force against people of color and then turn around and use force against and be aggressive towards law enforcement, but then try to play the victim and then break into a federal building, you know, and then you knock BLM peaceful protest when they've never did that. We went to the Capitol. Protests were out there in the Capitol. Nobody broke into the Capitol building. And there's also just last thing, this is just a picture just comparing like what the people at the BLM protest look like, how they were dressed, which looks very militarized, you know, compared to the people at today's events, which they didn't even look like, you know, they just looked like regular security people or cops or stuff like that. You know, they didn't look like the troops that were at the BLM protest. But, you know, that's really what I want to say for right now, unless, you know, Mr. Bay, you have something to add as well.
Reverend Al Sharpton mentioned today that there was a protest in Washington, D.C., in which it was acknowledged George Floyd. Say his name. There were about 10,000 people who attended this particular protest. And while they did, there was not one act of violence, not one arrest, one level of upheaval of the federal building. When you commit an assault like that, it is not a regular crime. It is a federal crime. I have personally been on protest, two, in fact, in my lifetime in Washington, D.C. And, of course, they were peaceful. And this is the American way to give you a voice in your protest. But when you – and I had the opportunity to actually speak to federal officers who said and brought to my attention, you do realize you're on federal property and you're subjected to federal law.
Yep.
And if the president wanted to have you arrested for trespassing on federal property, he could, but he didn't. Okay. And at that time, the president was Obama, Barack Obama. I'm really excited to hear you express yourself and your feelings about today's incident because you're 16 years old. Mm-hmm. And I just want to know, blatantly uncut, how does the chain of events of what you've seen today transpire, how does that make you feel?
You know, I've always it doesn't change the feeling because this is something that was obvious. But then the problem was that there's still people out there in this country that just are just ignorant to it and won't believe it and won't believe, you know, things I preached on the show, you know, especially white privilege. I've talked about, had a segment on. But, you know, there's still people out here that just ignore the fact that things like this still happen. And even something like today, I don't even think still would change the minds. It should change the minds of some people, but I don't think it would change the minds of everybody. And, you know, even when you said, you know, the how when you was in Washington, D.C., you know, the federal, you know, officers, you know, this is federal property, you know, that's trying to constantly remind you. But there was actually a video out there with police officers looking like they're leading them onto federal property, which is kind of ironic, but, you know, it just speaks to the nature of this country. And, you know, it just doesn't change my view. It doesn't. I just hopefully this opens the eyes to more people out there. But, even the former president, you could say, you know, Donald Trump, even his expressing himself on Twitter saying, you know, this is what happens when, you know, saying this is basically what happens you know, when quote unquote fraud election occurs, you know, in his words. Now, I'm not saying that, but you know, that's basically what he's saying. But like, you know, he was somebody who was always trying to, you know, knock the BLM protest. That's just something that is, you know, ironic and speaks to the hypocrisy of him. But, you know, that's really what I just have for you to answer your question.
Okay. Chris, you know, same question. Today's incident, what has occurred in Washington, D.C., what's your take on this?
The event to me was very, very disturbing. You know, I had a busy day, and I came back to a whirlwind of information of an event that took place that I had no warning. Like, there was no warning about what was going on. I had a discussion with my brother, and we were discussing about how an event like this could just take place without a warning. So what we deduced was that this was a planned event. This was not an event that took place yesterday. It was planned, like, it wasn't planned yesterday and took place today because this was too well organized and strategized. So for me, what I did was I had another conversation on a platform that I a social media platform with my connected ones, and what I made aware to them as well as myself as I discussed the matters of today is that this shows me clear as day where I stand on a social media totem pole. I mean, on social economic totem pole. Like, this is very disturbing because in conversation, there were opinions raised that if this was a group of black people, the results wouldn't have been the same. And that's just, you know, that's just plain, that's just cut and dry. You can see that. A blind person can see that. If it was a group of black people, the results wouldn't have been the same. Time and time again, and it's always the argument. But what more to that, to me, was it showed me that I should be more worried about the state of our country due to how easily accessible that facility was. You know, like Walter made the point, he made that point very valid. You know, this should be not just in the country, but this should be the most protected facility in the world. Us being the world power, this should be the most protected facility in the world. And to allow, I don't want to say allow, and for the events that taking place today to get to the juncture that it did, that it has, it shows me that it's a scary thing, you know. It has me worried, you know. It raised a lot of questions and suspicions as to the security of our country for that to have taken place. So that's where it left me at, you know, perplexed. And it is very hypocritical, you know, as well as, you know, like I mentioned, there was conversation within my groups. Another point was raised that, you know, a part of the hypocrisy is how someone may mention that, you know, it was very easy for President Trump to accept that he won the presidency. But when things didn't go in his favor, it's always they cheated, they swindled me, you know, they took this from us. And that was actually what he mentioned today as well. He made his speech to what was a lame attempt to, you know, calm the people down and get them to turn around. It was him vaguely, you know, addressing the sympathy of how he feels and how his supporters feel, but not with enough conviction to get them to go home. It wasn't enough seriousness for me. It was all about the election. So it kind of, to me, it promoted the actions of his supporters. Whether he made the declaration to go home, it wasn't convincing enough for me. That's just a personal opinion there.
Okay. Let me just put some icing on the cake. as a coach, win, lose, or draw, as me being a coach, win, lose, or draw, we all line up at the end of the competition and we shake hands showing good sportsmanship. There's a saying, it's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. You know, and, you know, at the end of the day, it's sour grapes. If I go into a building and yell fire, and there is no fire, I'm inciting a group of people to run for their lives. And that's not right. So when you say insightful things to people and they respond, one should be held accountable. And I think that what we're hustling with here in this conversation is, when are people who consider themselves privileged going to be held accountable? Because anytime a person of color crosses the line in any form or fashion, you know, the window slammed down, the level of accountability, what you should or should not have done, you know, it's right on top of us. We have 90 seconds left to the show.
Right.
And Val, if you're on the line, I'd like for you to contribute with a question or comment for tonight's show.
Very interesting topic tonight, sir. And yes, that is definitely a travesty that's going on in Washington, D.C. And not only was there so much rioting going on, but there is also a lady who lost her life. I don't know. They haven't reported who she was, you know, whether, you know, she was, you know, in the group or somebody who worked inside the facility, but someone was killed doing all this melee and craziness going on in Washington. And, you know, it's just a shame. I mean, you know, you lose an election, and as opposed to you just taking the loss, we are starting and encouraging all of this dysfunction, extra dysfunction in our country. So thank you for the conversation. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. I know you have another segment, Walter, but we're going to table it one more time. I'd like for you to close out the show. And after you do, I have one more song that we're going to walk out the door on.
Yes, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations. You know, this show was very needed, and a lot of information was to be taken in and learned. But again, our motto is Quest Youth Radio is the best
youth radio.